you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you, I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Reading from Isaiah chapter 43, verse 2. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Wednesday, May 10th, 2023, the Prime Life Times in Review. Joining me is a special first-time guest, but he's been working from afar. It's kind of interesting. A week or so back, I said, you know, Sam, you've been helping out, assisting, doing some editing with the Prime Life Times, helping each and every month. And I don't think we've met up since you were doing our conversational English classes at Lincoln Square Mall. And I said, how you doing? And so we got to get caught up. And I thought, with Marianne still recovering from surgery and being out for some weeks, how about you come in and I can introduce you to our listeners and we'll have Rob in. Rob will read one of his stories. And so I thought we would have a little of your testimony time. I mean, you've been volunteering, helping in tremendous ways. That's one of the reasons this paper can exist, is I have a lot of great volunteers helping, minimizing all the costs involved. But you've been serving with our conversational English classes in the past. You're involved in a ministry. You're helping with the Prime Life Times publication. So, Rob, by way of introduction, because I know we just pulled this all together really quickly, what would you want to say about Sam for our listeners to better understand who he is?
Sam is a gentleman who, though he has his PhD in music, is a real expert in written English, and he's illustrated that to me in several ways, including helping me teach my advanced English writing class. It started out as conversation classes, but some of the students were doing dissertations and theses and research papers, and so they really needed some advanced English writing.
And coming from Rob, I usually, when I brag up Rob Seidenberg, I say he's an editor that teaches editors how to edit. He's that good, that gifted. And so when he says somebody's pretty good, and you've said that about Jonathan Harrison, our office manager's son.
In fact, I was actually telling Sam how good Jonathan was just a few minutes before he came in.
Yeah, but you recommended Sam to be a part of our Prime Life Times editing team because you knew he had the capabilities to do it. And so, Sam, I wanted to publicly do a shout-out. Thank you for your many hours of service behind the scenes. When people read this and find very, very few mistakes or any problems with the edition, it's because we have a great team that's been put together. Rob highly recommended you, I think, a few years back. So thank you for joining us. But tell us a little of your faith journey. I know you're involved in ministries, reaching internationals, serving in your church, helping, obviously, with our Prime Life Times publication. But who is Sam Carroll?
Well, hi. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
good to see you and Rob again. I haven't seen either of you since COVID hit, I think.
Yeah.
So it's great to see you in person. I've been going back and forth on emails with Rob here and there and arguing about capitalization of hyphenated titles. Yeah, I think that was, you know, the Chicago Manual of Style had made a change from the 15th to the 16th edition. So we had a conversation about that.
Oh, yeah. Now we add that extra comma before the and oftentimes, where before that wasn't necessary. Rob's done a couple little workshops with some of the team to train us on the nuances with the English language and such.
Yeah, so I was born in the New England area, raised in a wonderful Christian home, and came to the Lord at a young age. So I thank God for that. And I came to Illinois in 2006 to work on a DMA. Rob said PhD, but it's actually not a PhD. It's a Doctor of Musical Arts. So a different degree. A DMA in percussion performance, and completed that in 2011. And the Lord kept us here. We've not been able to leave town, really.
Yeah.
Champaign-Urbana is a bit of a black hole. Easy to come into, but it's hard to leave.
Yes.
And while I was working on the doctorate, I met a gentleman named David Crabill at my church. We attended a same Sunday school class taught by Dave Webb, Gospel of John class, which ran for a good solid 4 years.
Yes, yes.
And David asked me to volunteer at his Friday night Bible study for international students. And it really amazed me when we got there to hear how people just showed up. And sometimes people would come in and say, "Hi, my name is such and such, and I've been in the country for 30 hours now." Mm-hmm. And sometimes David would say, "Well, we're glad you're here. How did you find out about us?" My friend from my lab back in China said, "Oh, you're going to Champagne. You got to go to David's house." And I was really struck by that. I just thought the Lord's really doing good work here. Hmm. That people want to show up. They want to learn the Bible and find out about spiritual things. And there was a lot of spiritual hunger that I saw, particularly in the Chinese students. And so it was in 2015 that my wife and I went on staff with International Students Incorporated, the same organization. So we work with David and Ruth Krabiel. We host international students in our house. We run a couple of different Bible studies. Some of our studies are on Zoom now, and some of them are in person. It's a great ministry. I think it's very influential. This is a great location for such a ministry. Mm-hmm. You might know that University of Illinois is one of the top universities in the country for number of international students. I was looking up the stats on it, and NYU claims to be the top, but they kind of cheat because they include the data from all of their campuses at once. And that's not kosher. But we're certainly in the top handful. USC, I think, is at the top of the list. But we have, about 11,500 international students, plus another 1,100 or so visiting scholars this year. A lot of those are countries that are close to the gospel. Mm-hmm. Of course, China is by far the largest group. It has been for decades. But India is also a big sender. Indonesia, Bangladesh, Nigeria, Turkey, Pakistan, they're all in the top 10. And so it's a really great opportunity. Maybe the Muslim student from Indonesia says, "I've been interested, I'd like to hear about Christianity, but I'd like to do it sometime when I know that my radical uncle is not going to be hearing about it." Mm-hmm. And so this is an opportunity for them, and it's an opportunity for us to share the gospel.
Talk a little about hospitality. For our listeners that maybe have never had an international student into their home, the power in just sharing a meal or inviting them into your home.
Oh, sure. Yeah, hospitality is huge. The stats I saw said that it's 80% of international students never enter an American home, which is really a shame. And so we actually have three students living with us right now, one from China, one from Cameroon, and one from Ghana. And we have lots of students in and out of our house all the time. Sometimes we show up and we're, "Oh, here's someone here. here's a student's children who are having their hair done by one of the students who lives with us." Okay, that's great. It's very powerful. Both those students who are already Christians and those who are not, just sharing meals together, sharing time together, living life together is very powerful. One student from Colombia talked about seeing me and my wife play cribbage in the morning. Okay, so when my wife and I have breakfast in the morning, we play cribbage. We've done this our whole married life. Mm-hmm. Play a hand of cribbage and, try to skunk the other player. and we don't think much about it. But for her, this was a big deal because it meant that we were actively taking time and investing in our marriage. Mm-hmm. And her own parents didn't really do that. They were still married because they were from a Catholic country, but they were emotionally kind of divorced.
Yeah, disconnected.
And so that was a big deal to her, and that was inspired her to think, when I get married, I want to invest in my marriage that same way. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I never would have thought of, right? So living life together brings these moments, brings these opportunities for influence in ways that certainly God anticipates, but we don't.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of inviting them in, maybe for a meal
certainly.
Conversation, because they're intrigued and they feel welcomed into American home. I'll give you one example that David Krabiel shared, which made all the difference in this international student's life. They were having a little party, and this was a new person that was being introduced to the Krabiels and such. And as they entered the home, he said, "Yeah, just go ahead, throw your coat in the bedroom." And you would think nothing about it. There was maybe 20 other coats, and they threw it on the bed. And it left this huge impression. Wow, they trusted me to go into their private bedroom to lay an article of my clothing down on their bed. And that was just so unbelievable. And you would think, nothing about it, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. for them it left a great impact. And then they socialized and shared and extended food and conversation, and it was their first American friend. And, you know, the Krabiels, and I know both of you, you love on internationals because it's very biblical. I mean, God's word says, mm-hmm. you know, reach out to the alien, the foreigner and such, extend that hospitality. But many times we can leave a great impression, and that's oftentimes used of God as a stepping stone for them to want to know why we would do something like that. Why would we let them into our home, into our private bedroom just to lay their coat down?
Yes, yeah, certainly. And these students, it's always interesting to me because they're very, very intelligent, right? They're the cream of the crop, some of the finest students of their in their countries. And so they pick things up very quickly, but they don't have the same frame of reference. They may not have any exposure, for example, to the Bible. And so if I mention a Bible verse that everyone knows, if I say, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, and they would say, wait a minute, what? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. So you're saying that God wants to take care of me and give me everything I need, just like a shepherd cares for his sheep? And this is a new concept that they've never considered.
Yeah.
And these things just come out as, you know, in your normal conversation, these things will come out the way that God has worked in your life over many years, perhaps. And I think it's most effective when you're not even really trying that but mm-hmm. it just naturally flows out. Jesus said the mouth speaks out of the overflow of the heart.
Mm-hmm. And how many times you can ask them, can I pray over something? Mm-hmm, and sometimes mm-hmm. I do this, especially with Jewish friends or people that maybe don't know the Lord, maybe outside the Christian circle, because I'll say, or I'll put a disclaimer. Now, when I say, can I pray for you? I'm not saying that I'm any better than you. I am closer to God, or that you need my prayers, so tell me what you need for me to do on your behalf. All I'm saying is I'm going to go before the sovereign, holy, loving, wonderful God who delights in people, and he delights in you, and I'm going to ask him, do you need healing? Do you need a job? All I'm doing is approaching him on your behalf. So know that I don't think I'm any better than you. And sometimes they're like, oh, that's what prayer is? And so you almost have to explain, mm-hmm. yeah, it's just mm-hmm. a conversation with this wonderful God who created all of us.
Certainly. Yeah. It can feel kind of vulnerable sometimes to say, can I pray for you? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you're going to react. But yes, you're right, Mark. That can often be very powerful. A testimony of the intimacy that we share with our Lord.
Yeah. Well, Rob, we have you in today to share one of your stories, Rural Memories. It's a favorite of many. It's in this month's edition of the Prime Lifetime. It's titled The Day We Burned the Hillside. And that's why I opened up with that Isaiah chapter 43, verse 2 verse to make a little connection. I always like to read scripture over the air and share it with our listeners.
Let me put in a word here. Yeah. If you'd ask me which of your friends is the most likely to have burned down an entire hillside, I would have guessed right.
Okay. Okay, so you heard that recommendation from my friend Sam, a member of our editorial team, The Day We Burned the Hillside by Rob Seidenberg. This is on page 4 if you have the May Prime Life Times. If you don't have it, go out and get one, for goodness sake. It's free.
And it's located at over 400 central Illinois locations and west central Indiana locations. And you can stop by primelifetimes.com, primelifetimes.com. Look under the distribution tab, and it's all listed by state and then by city. So an easy way for you to find a location near you.
And if you live in India, as somebody who reads my sister's cooking column in the same paper does, they've written back and forth several times. She reads the Prime Life Times online. You can do that too. We learn fire safety from our ever-cautious parents, from special school programs, and 4-H. Still, we were far from a practical grasp of the concept. One lovely May morning with Mother teaching school, Dad in town on business, and Grandma busy with such life-giving activities as mixing baking powder biscuit dough, we five farm kids were running amok. We had played hooky, all suffering from light bulb fever. If you're not familiar with that, I won't enlighten you.
Sorry.
The Soviet invasion of Hungary and the use of Molotov cocktails applied from upper story windows with deadly effect against huge Russian tanks were in the news. We wanted to make one. Not a tank, but a Molotov cocktail. It would be years before I had a true understanding of explosives incendiary devices, or how to safely use and dispose of them, something Uncle Sam would later teach me, and that I'd just as soon forget. Components were readily available. A beautiful spring morning, old glass Clorox bottles, cotton rags, an unlocked overhead gas tank, matches, and a complete absence of adult supervision.
I think anyone who reads the title, The Day We Burned the Hillside, knows exactly where this is going to go.
We filled a jug with gasoline and set it in a small clearing, far from the buildings, next to a steel T-post driven in the ground. We naively planned to blow up the post.
Ha!
Aided and abetted by my four siblings, I soaked the rag in gas and inserted one end into the bottle. We lit the fuse and ran away from our bomb. Nothing happened. At first, the fuse burned merrily and brightly for 10 minutes. We sneaked closer. What was going on? Not much, but there was an explosion after all, and the glass bottle shattered, sending a tremendous burst of fire and heat 20 feet in every direction. You're fortunate I'm telling you this because, one, now you don't have to conduct this dangerous experiment for yourself. You can take my word for the results. And two, you can carefully supervise your kids and grandkids during any such dangerous activities. Better yet, forbid such mayhem altogether. Our device was at the foot of a steep hillside covered with big bluestem, a native Illinois and Indiana prairie grass. That species and a Pogon gerardii once covered thousands of acres of Illinois and Indiana prairie. Adults and kids got lost in the stuff, which grew 6 to 8 feet tall. The old dead grass was everywhere, with a green carpet of new growth just taking hold, and by everywhere I mean everywhere on this hillside. Yes, we started a prairie fire. We knew that was bad, very bad. We had shown poor judgment, but each of us had a well-nurtured conscience, tuned up through constant training and judicially applied corporal punishment.
Now, what are the ages of your brothers and sisters?
Well, we had about 2 years apart. My older sister was 2 years older.
So how old are you at this point in the story?
I was probably about 11 or 12.
So like 7 to 14 or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. We had to put out that fire. Someone had given me a heavy Boy Scout shirt with metal buttons. I was wearing it. I tore it off and attacked the fire, but to no avail. The hungry fire quickly consumed the shirt. By the way, if you have to fight a fire with a shirt, choose a wool shirt because wool is fire resistant.
Good to know.
My brother ran for a scoop shovel. I had some success with that in fighting the fire that raced through the long, dry grass. My resourceful brother soon returned with a short-handled fire shovel. That worked too, but the fire was beyond our control. One of our sisters shouted that a car was coming down our lane. We didn't recognize it, and when I say down, we lived in the hills, so I mean down our lane. You could see the lane from a mile away. We didn't recognize it, but a man we didn't know and Dad got out and came running. Dad sent me to put a water barrel on a little carrier mounted on our Ford tractor's three-point hitch. I filled the barrel three-quarters full of water, grabbed a big stack of gunny sacks, and returned to the fire. We all fought that fire until mid-afternoon. The man with Dad, a salesman, jumped into the fray, gave his best, and ended up as sweaty and sooty as the rest of us. I don't remember Dad's buying anything from him. We concentrated on saving the pasture fence, but about 50 white oak posts burned.
Wow.
We had to replace them quickly to keep the cows in the pasture. Dad set a backfire, which burned very slowly downhill. It seemed reluctant to burn. It met the fire coming up and expired in an enormous cloud of smoke. Dad and Mother said the horrifying outcome of our experiment was sobering and punitive enough. We didn't get spankings. Dad solemnly forgave us, but admonished us severely. I would later take forest fire prevention and firefighter training in Southern Illinois' beautiful Shawnee National Forest. Later still, I would serve as an explosive range safety officer, supervising destruction of unexploded ordnance. I would also serve as a federal park ranger. In some few cases, what doesn't kill us really does make us stronger, or at least smarter. The challenge is to survive. Something dangerous enough to disable a Russian tank isn't an ideal plaything for kids. We caused hundreds of dollars worth of damage to a fence and its posts. We risked life and limb, and we had 2 days' hard work repairing that fence. Dad, my brother, and I returned to the scene of the crime the following Sunday. A few metal buttons were all that remained of my beloved shirt.
Copyright Rob Seidenberg, used by permission. Thank you, Rob, for writing this story and allowing it to be printed in our beloved Prime Lifetimes publication, the May edition. You can also read it online at primelifetimes.com, primelifetimes.com, but pick up a paper copy as it's fun to turn the pages and see what's on the next page. It's in color, it has games and puzzles and stories and movie reviews and some great advertisers that allow this paper to be free of charge. They pay to be in the paper. Maybe you're a business and you want to showcase your service or your product. Give us a call and we'd love to touch base with you and you can be a part of the Prime Lifetimes. Call us at 217-367-7777, 217-367-7777. So back to you, Sam. Does Marianne have you doing certain columns, or how does the work get divided as you do some of the proofreading and editing?
Honestly, I'm not sure.
I can answer that question. If there's an article that I've really struggled with, but if there's a particularly tough one that I spent hours on, that article will go to Sam, most likely. Hmm. And he will shorten it, he will clarify things, he will straighten out things, and he'll even find mistakes that I've either left in or introduced. And that makes him invaluable to our team effort.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sam, for being a part of today, the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends. This program is archived at greatnewsradio.org, also at wluj.org under the Mark and Friends tab. We appreciate all those that participate in this Prime Lifetimes. It's a huge undertaking with the sales team, the distribution team, the editing team, the layout team, and the graphics that are involved, and all the coordinating to pull it all together. So we appreciate how God is using this Prime Lifetimes publication. In fact, last Saturday when we had our gathering at the open house, we made sure everyone got a copy of this month's edition, and so many people had never seen it before. So we're making greater inroads in central Illinois throughout Springfield, Bloomington, Decatur, and other towns, even towards Macomb, Lincoln. So we appreciate all those that are helping get the word out about the Prime Lifetimes. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns, Rob Seidenberg, and Sam Carroll with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.